Case number 24-5152 et al. Ariana Cortez and Karen Logan, appellants versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Solon for the appellants cross appellees Ariana Cortez et al. Mr. Lahane for the appellee cross appellant National Labor Relations Board.
Good morning, counsel. Mr. Solon, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. This court has jurisdiction because a declaration will have real meaning for the parties here, especially if Gwen Wilcox is returned to the board. If Section 3A is unconstitutional, Wilcox is not a legitimate board member, and she could not decide any of my client's cases pending before the board because any decision she makes would be ultra vires and would be inconsistent with the declaration stating that the board has to conduct itself in a manner consistent with Article 2 and to be politically accountable. And without Wilcox, the board lacks a quorum and can't decide any case right now. This means that if Wilcox is on the board, a declaration definitely resolves the here and now injury of appearing before an official that has been lawfully removed and restored based only on a court order. And even if Wilcox is not on the board, because right now the Chief Justice's stay has not been resolved, a declaration still has real meaning because it effectively means Wilcox cannot be returned to the board. It could serve as a shield to prevent her from deciding any future case. So rather than resolving the issue, Wilcox's removal and the subsequent litigation and her subsequent litigation exacerbates the harm here. And the injury I would contend here is far more concrete now than it was at the beginning of this litigation or in any other separation of powers case that deals with the removal provision since Morrison. In Morrison, Free Enterprise Fund, Celia Law, and Collins, they were all brought by private citizens appearing before officials with unlawful tenure protections. But the president in none of those cases ever evidenced a desire to fire any of those officials. Yet the court still found those cases were ripe because of an injury of merely appearing before an official who's unlawfully protected by tenure protections. But here, Cortez and Karam are going to appear before an official who was removed and restored by a judicial order. Wilcox, who has a court order restored from the district court restoring.
We don't know what's going to happen. Why would any court decide such a constitutional question? And as you say, it is in fact not a here and now injury. It's a maybe or maybe not injury.
Well, the stay is not permanent. The stay is a temporary suspension.
I'm aware of that, but an administrative stay is usually followed by either a denial or grant. So why would this court in advance, at this time,
because
there's no disagreement between you and the other side.
I disagree about that, but I can address.
Well, I mean, let me finish. Okay. No disagreement on the content of the declaration that you want.
Mm-hmm.
No disagreement about the legal rule that you want to have pronounced by a court. Correct?
I would about the declaration. They are still seeking a judgment, though, against my client. They have a cross appeal, and they say that they're entitled to judgment. So I think we're adverse on that basis alone.
What judgment do they want?
They want a judgment that the case is dismissed. I don't know if it's with prejudice, but they want a judgment in their favor.
Right. Well, but that's just disagreeing about a jurisdictional question.
Collins is a merits question.
What I'm asking, okay, but you don't get to that unless there's jurisdiction. So the first question is there any adversity?
Yes.
And as to that, you're both in agreement.
There's adversity to the board, and it has even if the stay is continued, it has
They spoke for the board. I thought they were speaking for the board.
They were. I'm going to say what my view is. They can speak for themselves, but I think this case is against the board, and a declaration would serve as a shield to Wilcox returning because it would mean she couldn't return.
But we don't know.
Well, we don't know right now.
Right now. So you're the one who said it was a here and now injury. But
we don't know right
now. It's a maybe, maybe not injury right now.
Well, I still
think it's a maybe, maybe not injury.
So what I would say is our best case is if the stay is resolved and she's back on the board, right? But I would say still there is still a here and now.
That's your best case? I don't know what you want.
What? Our best case for jurisdiction.
Okay.
Our best case for jurisdiction.
Right.
Right. So, but I still
litigation
think
litigation is what the status is right now. I get it's a temporary rather than permanent right now.
Right. Right.
But
it would be
permanent. But
it would be weird.
But what you have right now is exactly what you want to achieve, and they agree that that's the right legal outcome. So I'm still having trouble seeing the adversity today.
But when Wilcox was on the board, because she was returned to the board for about 3 or 4 weeks, they decided roughly 15 cases. Those, we don't want the board deciding cases with her on it. And if the stay is lifted, right, she'll be returned to the board. In the meantime,
the stay is retained. She won't be. So again, I'm asking you about, again,
because it would resolve her.
We're in this in between time, and we tend not to. We assess whether there is adversity between parties at the time of our decision.
Right.
And there isn't now.
So I have two answers. Mm-hmm. One is it serves as a shield to her return. It would effectively end her case. It would stop the harm of that happening, right? Because if we won and Section 3A was unconstitutional, she has no right to return to the board. So it would have a real, the question is does it have a real world impact that would change how my clients and the board interface? And that would prevent someone from returning to the board. So that's a real world impact. But second, that even if you don't buy that's a real world impact, that's an argument for withholding a decision in this case until the stay has been resolved. But only until—
Did you ask in your supplemental briefing for this case to be held in abeyance?
No, because I don't think it needs to be. But that would be an argument for stay. If you dismiss this case as moot, right?
Doesn't it need to be? Even in the best of all, if there isn't a jurisdictional problem, mm-hmm. what you're basically describing is that we should decide this case to interrupt ongoing litigation over Wilcox's statement. Why would that be appropriate?
Well, I think it's appropriate for a couple of reasons. One is, if this court has jurisdiction, it has an unflagging duty to exercise that jurisdiction under Article 3, and it shouldn't put off that jurisdiction. Second, I think this case is just as important as Wilcox. Right? The separation of powers doesn't just protect president. It protects citizens appearing before a board. And that's why Morrison, Free Enterprise Fund, Celia Collins, all dealt with private parties challenging removal restrictions and the court deciding those issues in turn.
So you would object to, even if we get past adversity, you would object to holding this case for the case that's about to be argued on Harrison Wilcox.
Yeah. And this case has also been pending for, you know, much longer than Wilcox v. Trump.
I thought you just told me we could hold it in abeyance as your backup argument.
Well, that's my backup argument. That's why I said I don't want you to dismiss the case. You shouldn't dismiss
you just
the
said
case.
A hard no to the chief judge, but now you're saying that's Plan B.
Well, it's more like Plan D or E. Because the first thing I want...
How many other plans are... we're only here on the jurisdictional question.
I don't think we're just here on the jurisdictional
question. Okay, well, that's all the district court decided. So, district court did not resolve the merits of this case. And so, if we're here on a jurisdictional question, and that were to be resolved... I don't know what all your other letters are between A and B, then either we say district court was right or the district court was wrong in its judgment finding no jurisdiction. And if we think it was wrong about that, we send it back for it to resolve the merits. So I don't know what the BC...
Well, the district court resolved two questions. One, it said we didn't have standing, and that was wrong, and the board concedes that it was wrong. In any event, they're standing now because of the request for review. But second, the board also went and decided the Collins issue. And the Collins issue...
You're going to get to the Collins issue until you've found a removal violation, right?
Well, that's not what the board has said. They said the board and the court said, we don't even have to decide the Humphreys case, the Humphreys issue, until you decide Collins first. Now, I think that's backwards because the court in Collins decided the removal question and then decided the remedial issue. And I think it's better seen as a remedial issue. But the district court rejected Collins as a remedial issue and said it's a question of the merits. It's an element of the claim.
Okay, so that still wouldn't have us deciding the merits of the removal authority.
Well, the court can decline to go to the merits of the removal authority, but it's a pure legal question. There's no need to remand to the district court for further development about what Humphreys means. This court can decide that, especially if it has jurisdiction, and especially if we overcome the Collins roadblock, although I don't see it's a roadblock because I don't think Collins applies.
I had a question about the way the district court decided standing. At the time the district court was looking at the case, you were no longer before, or its rationale was you no longer had a proceeding before the board.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, throughout the district court litigation, you were a party in interest for the unfair labor proceedings. Do you have thoughts on whether that status is sufficient? I know you've got the we were out and we were back in thing, but yeah. Put that aside. Is that party in interest status sufficient to have kept you with a proceeding before the board?
I think so. I definitely think so. Because the question...
You're not seeking any relief from in those proceedings. Nope. On the other hand, the board sort of put you in that status.
The board status. It's not the best read to decide the case, mm-hmm. right? And I think there's a much stronger read considering we have requests.
I'm just asking this question, though.
But yeah, I think so. Mostly because it's an interest that we have before mm-hmm. the board, right? And so the question is do you have business before the board? And the business is admittedly slight because it's dependent upon another case, but that case determines whether or not my clients had a substantive right to seek another election. Mm-hmm. So we still have business before the board, and we still want the board to conduct itself in a politically accountable way at that point. So it's not the same as full party status, I'll admit that. Mm-hmm. And it's not as strong, but I think it's a basis.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll give you a little bit of time for unless have further questions. We'll hear from the board and give you a little bit of time for rebuttal.
Okay, I'm sorry. One more question. It wasn't crystal clear from your briefs, so I want to make absolutely sure. Have you fully abandoned your request for injunctive relief in this case or just on appeal?
So we don't want to seek an injunction at this point. At any point in this case, we've abandoned that argument.
Abandoned your request and your complaint
for injunction. And if I can explain why.
Okay, but can you just answer my question?
Yes, permanently.
Okay.
If I can explain why. Mm-hmm. An injunction and a declaration in this case have no meaningful difference. And you don't have to take my word for it. That's the word of the board. The board at the district court said it opposed an injunction because it said a declaration would have the exact same effect as an injunction in this case.
I was just asking, and they're right. It's been at least not crystal clear to me whether you are just not, you're abandoning it for purposes of appeal or you are fully abandoning for all time in this litigation your request for injunction.
We're not seeking an injunction because a declaration in this case before the board decides would have the same effect as an injunction.
Thank you.
Because, okay.
Can I just give you one? I'm going to ask you one more question.
Okay.
So your basic response on adverseness, it seems to me, and I'd like you to explain why this is wrong, mm-hmm. is that we should resolve the legal question in this case where no one disagrees about it to preempt it being resolved against you in a case where the parties do disagree. And that sets off every alarm bell I have of what it means to only resolve controversies with adverse parties.
Okay.
It seems to be exactly backwards. How would you dissuade me of that?
I would dissuade you of that because one is the board only changed its, if it's an Article 3 matter, right? If you don't have Article 3 jurisdiction, then there is no, then you can't decide this case at all. But case after case, so if you look at Windsor, if you look at Celia, the government abandoned defending the statute and the court still decided the case, right? Because it's not an Article 3 question. It's a prudential question. And in this case, I mean, I feel a little sandbagged because the government changed its position after almost 2 years of arguing 6 weeks ago, right? And the prudential question, I think, is just as strong in this case. Because what you would be saying is I think this is just as important case as Wilcox. And the arguments are before the court in the board's briefs. The board hasn't withdrawn its briefs. The board just said, we don't rely on it anymore. And the court, it's been Humphrey's month at the court, right? The court is well aware of all the issues with Humphrey's and the arguments for and against. So put that all in one side. But to not decide this case would be saying that it's the court's province to decide what the law is. And they're gonna say, well, in this case, we're going to outsource that to the president. And because the president has made a differing opinion, we're going to let that differing opinion stand and not exercise our own jurisdiction to decide this case. And I think that's wrong. Any other questions? I can sit down.
We'll give you a little time for rebuttal. Bill Lahane.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may please the court. My name is Patty Lahane. I am here on behalf of the NLRB. This case should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction because the parties are not adverse. And even if they were, the district court correctly dismissed this case because appellants failed to demonstrate causal harm. Turning to the first and really the crucial point here is that appellants are ultimately seeking a declaratory judgment that removal protections for members of the NLRB are unconstitutional. The problem is that the NLRB is no longer defending a contrary position. On the crucial underlying constitutional question at the heart of this case, the parties agree. And when litigants ultimately agree on the answer to the essential question presented and desire the same result, the parties are no longer adverse for purposes of Article III jurisdiction. And when the government agrees with a litigant on a constitutional question and takes no action contrary to that to their asserted position, there's also no adverseness. The critical inquiry in adverseness case law is about whether the relief is going to have a real-world, tangible impact on the conduct of the parties. Here, a declaratory judgment would essentially have no meaning or consequences for the parties in any practical sense. What the plaintiffs are asking for is a declaration that will merely affirm what both sides agree is the law. There's no immediate threat to be addressed here, as evidenced by the appellant's arguments that they're not seeking injunctive relief. And the toothlessness of such a declaration is compounded by the fact that the executive branch is already conducting itself in accord with appellant's view of the law. Now, of course, there are instances where an agreement on the constitutional question did not extinguish the party's adverseness. Saylor Law and Windsor both involve parties agreeing on a constitutional question but remaining adverse. But this case is not like Saylor Law because the government continued to seek enforcement of a civil investigative demand despite agreeing on the merits of the constitutional claim. Here, the NLRB is not trying to enforce anything against them. Same for Windsor. The government agreed on the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, but nevertheless withheld the plaintiff's estate tax refund. But again, the NLRB is not withholding anything from the appellants. In fact, both parties want the administrative case to proceed. The operative inquiry here relates to the impact of the relief on conduct. And the thing we disagree on is whether there should be a declaration, but that doesn't have anything to do with conduct. Nothing about our conduct changes. A declaration here would not require the government to do something it would not do or stop it from doing something it would otherwise do. At bottom, adverseness is necessary to ensure that the court is being asked to settle a bona fide dispute with real impact and import on the parties involved. And that just does not exist here.
So just as a practical matter, maybe there's legal reasons you would just tell us not to issue a declaratory judgment. Why are you bothered by us issuing a declaratory judgment?
Well, I think that there are institutional concerns, for the agency to, not want to grant declaratory relief when just on the purely on the basis of when an appellant has standing, and I think that there's good reasons also for the court to not grant declaratory relief when the plaintiffs aren't entitled to it because they haven't satisfied the elements of the claim.
I mean, so you're protecting our interests, but I mean, in terms of your own, what you're just worried about a precedent that allows for declaratory relief to be entered against the board?
I think that there's a colorable, argument to be made about the causal harm element of this case, but
On the Collins issue,
right? Yeah. Yes, but the primary overarching issue is it's a matter of jurisdiction, and because we're not adverse, there's just no jurisdiction to pass on that.
We're just trying to get at practically. If everything you say is true, you might say we don't care if you enter a declaratory judgment, and the fact that you're not might suggest the agency wants to be able to change its position or something like that.
I stand by my previous answer. I think that there's a right. That my point about institutional concerns. I think that the
problem would be if, you know, this may be party specific relief, and if it's party specific relief, then we'll be faced with a deluge of claims seeking declaratory relief just on the basis of standing and not necessarily on the basis of causal harm. So it's an administrative problem.
Now, can I just make sure I understand one part of the sequencing here, which is, so you did file a cross appeal, as counsel on the other side mentioned.
Yes.
But I take it that you agree that if you were to prevail on the adverseness argument, that would result in a sustaining of the dismissal without prejudice. If we could get past jurisdiction and got to Collins, then you would get a dismissal with prejudice. But you agree that we never get to that issue if we agree with you on adverseness. So the dismissal without prejudice is, I'm sorry, the dismissal with prejudice is not in the field of vision at that point.
Yes.
So it would be more robust relief.
Yes, I agree. I think that would be, we would be amenable to that. I think the crucial issue is that there just isn't jurisdiction now anymore.
Colleagues, have any questions for you?
Can you just tell me quickly what it means when the court on its own, or court, when the board on its own makes someone a party in interest to another proceeding? So are they still before the board in some sense?
No, I think that
the board said, we're not letting you go away. We're throwing you into this. I mean, it seems almost like it's some sort of abeyance type ruling by the board.
I think that's an accurate way to.
Well, you're still a party before the board.
Right, but
when your case is in abeyance.
Yes, but the business before the board is that you're waiting on the outcome of another case.
That's what an abeyance is.
And then a determination. But I wouldn't say that that's sufficient.
So you're not still a party to a case before.
Right. I just think it's, yeah.
If this case were held in abeyance, if we were to hold this case in abeyance, wouldn't the board still be a party to a case before this court? It's just a case that's held in abeyance.
Well, I think the board would be a party, but I think, the operative thing would be is how if this case was held in abeyance, how Wilcox came out. And depending on that dictates whether.
Yeah, I'm asking a procedural question, not for this case, about whether, in fact.
Right.
They had a proceeding before the board throughout the time of the district court litigation because their case was essentially held in abeyance.
Yeah, I don't think that would constitute being a party before the board. But
after the unfair labor practice proceeding was resolved, did they have to make a whole new filing, or did they just renew their pre-existing filings?
They had to refile. They had to refile with the regional director their petition, and then
the same petition,
right?
They just sort of give notice that we're now reactivating it.
No, I believe that they had to file a new petition with the board seeking a decertification election, and then we started this.
Well, then it's not a hold in abeyance, right?
Then it's not in abeyance.
Okay.
If they have to file a whole, it's just really confusing.
I believe that's the case, yes.
Thank you, counsel, unless you have anything further?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stolen, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Yeah, I don't think I need
that procedural question. After the cases were held, when the cases were held for the unfair labor practice, did you have to file? It was as if you had never filed before. You had to file a new one, or did your other one kind of spring back?
No, I've done this before. This is what we did in this case. We just emailed the regional director and the parties, and we said that the case has been resolved. We're asking to reopen the case. We didn't have to have a whole new filing.
You didn't file any new filings.
No.
Sprung back to life, or so you notified them that it was back to life in your view.
Right, exactly, and that we were just seeking reinstatement at that point of the same case. Right. So just to give the court a little idea, when you file a petition, you file the showing of interest confidential with the board. You file an actual form that describes the unit, describes the election you're seeking, gives election dates. We didn't do any of that. All we just said is renew our old one, right? Okay. So just moving to the substance of it, Wilcox's return is like a sword of Damocles hanging over our head. And as long as Wilcox's return is out there, either thinking of it as a court, the district court order, which, or thinking of it as when the stay is resolved, that will mean the NLRB is not conducting itself in accordance with Article 2, and that means we definitely have adversity. Now, I would just want to close really quickly with this: is the board is really, really resisting any kind of a declaration, even though they say that they agree that a declaration would be, wise on the merits. And the question is why, and I think it's kind of a weird Kafkaesque position, right? They say under Collins that you can't state a harm until the president has evidenced a desire to fire someone or actually fired someone. And then when the president fires someone, they turn around and say, oh, well, if it's too late, you can't state a case. So at what point could you possibly state a case under the board's position? I don't know. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.